Good morning, Joe. Good morning to myself. Why does Joe no longer say Dr. Shattuck? I think he stopped it because you asked him to stop calling you Dr. Shattuck.
No,
he never asked it. I just thought you were handling it.
I never expect anybody to call me doctor.
But why did you stop, Joe?
I felt that you were handling it.
Oh, I see. So you thought you were giving me ammunition to tease the doctor.
I thought you were making fun of me.
Oh, he needed your protection. Yeah. That was very kind of you, Joe. All right, I'm not going to call you doctor, and I'm going to call you Red Sox Shattuck. Red Sox, because you're from Massachusetts.
Okay. And what I'm going to do, Governor, is send you a pair of Allen socks, which we give away during the fun drive, so you can have it. You can wear them. They're yellow with like sort of black polka dots, and my face is on them. So,
do you support the? Do you root for the Red Sox against New York teams?
Yes.
You know, see, that's where the tension. You and Mayor De Blasio, by the way.
Oh yeah, he did. He does that.
But yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Just think about that for a while. We'll have a different offline conversation.
So if he roots for the Red Sox and I root for the Red Sox, that makes me complicit.
I'm just saying, it's either a heck of a coincidence. There's a geographic bond, maybe a cultural bond. I'm just saying.
We speak every day, he and I, and he said, why don't you ask him this and why don't you ask him that? Okay, let's go. New York has now ended the religious exemption for vaccinations after a close assembly vote and loud protests yesterday. You have suggested in the past that there may be First Amendment issues here. Why do you want to sign it?
Because public health comes first. Public health comes first. I respect, obviously, religious freedoms and liberties, and we're very proud of that. I understand the concern of the anti-vaxxers, but I think public health outweighs both. You are right. This is a terrible public health hazard that we're dealing with.
Yep.
You're right. In this day and age, it is everybody is a high decibel level. The anti-vaxxers, as they're called, were very, very loud. It was a very close vote in the assembly. I think it was just one vote.
How come it was so close? You know these guys. How come it was so close?
I think it's
a public health issue.
I think we're at a time in politics and society where feelings are very strong about everything. There are no tepid feelings. And politicians are very sensitive to opposition, right?
Right.
You make too many enemies, and then you're no longer in elected office.
Right.
And I'm telling you, the political opposition on this vaccination bill was very loud and very passionate, and I think they had an effect. I applaud the assembly speaker for getting it done at the end of the day, but it was a tough vote.
You know, it's so interesting. I used to teach my students about in the tank or off the hook. So let's just say you represent a district which has, a religious group in it, and you don't want to alienate them because you don't want to lose their block of votes. So they say to you, okay, you're off the hook. You can go. We have enough votes. And that's why it comes out so close. You think?
I think that was more accurate earlier on.
Yeah.
I think everyone is, all these electeds are more nervous and more anxious. You know, this is a very volatile political environment. Next year, you have the New York City-based Democrats who worry about primaries from the left.
Yep.
And you have more in the Senate, marginal members who are afraid of challenges from the Republicans, from the right.
Yeah.
And yes, it's going to be a Donald Trump year. And yes, I believe Donald Trump loses this state, but he will win certain districts, and many of the issues we're dealing with take real political guts. You know, the gun issue, Alan, I paid a political price for gun safety that I'm still paying 7 years later. I'm proud of it.
You mean in upstate New York? Yep.
Yes, the pro-life groups, they believe passionately, and I understand their beliefs, and that doesn't go away. The anti-immigration groups feel very passionately. So these are real political consequences.
And yet, wait, there's a little bit of, you know, I mean, I'm not going to play the violin for you here. You won overwhelmingly. What are you talking about?
No, I'm not talking about me. I'm talking,
well,
I don't
talking
run
about
next
you.
Year. I'm talking about the legislators who have to run next year and be held accountable for these votes that we just took. We were talking about the anti-vaxxers. I'm sure next year they're going to remember, you know, they're very passionate. And on these issues where there's deep passion, there are political ramifications.
Yeah. Okay, so you were attorney general before you were governor. Now, does this vaccination bill hold up in an inevitable court challenge on religious grounds, especially with this Supreme Court?
I believe it. Supreme Court, I'm not going to wager anything with this Supreme Court.
Right.
But California passed a bill that is that we basically modeled in our bill. The bill was challenged. The bill was upheld. So I feel good about the bill that we have signed. The Supreme Court, who knows?
Well, I know. I mean, I know what they've been doing. They say, you know, religion comes first, don't they? That's a sort of Trumpian mantra.
Yeah. Well, right now we have the public health risk and the hazard. This bill will go into effect now.
Yep.
And then, since we speak regularly, 3 years from now when it gets to the Supreme Court, we'll wager on it.
That's funny. There's only a week for the session. Now, is there going to be what we call a big ugly, you know, coming together, kumbaya, you, the Senate, the Assembly, and you're going to pass a whole lot of stuff? Or are there things you want to see done that aren't being done?
No, let's take a step back. First, it has already been the big beautiful, right, to juxtapose with the big ugly.
Yeah.
This session, we have done more impactful, progressive measures than I believe any legislative session in modern political history. You know, memories are short, but just the Reproductive Health Act, Child Victims Act, gender, the gun bills we passed, early voting, LLC loophole, which people said would never be closed. The Affordable Care Act, congestion pricing downstate. I mean, these are all historic accomplishments, and they're all in the books already.
And yet you want to get more stuff done.
Yes. Well, that's me, and that's my aggressive personality, and it's never enough. It's never enough, and we have another day to do more good, so strive to do more good.
So you have an aggressive personality?
Some people think that. I don't believe it. I think I'm sort of a laid-back, cool dude in a loose mood. But some people would say I'm aggressive. I do believe I've been given an opportunity by the people of this state. We have big problems, require big solutions, and I work as hard as I can every day. And look, to get things done politically in this environment, you have to push. It is the stone uphill. If you don't apply pressure, nothing happens.
Okay,
right?
So what do you want?
I want love. After that, sexual harassment needs a new definition.
Let's talk about that. Second and third degree rape. Explain to everybody
what increase the statute of limitations. It's now 5 years for second and third degree rape. Increase the statute of limitations, which gives the woman more time
to
bring the course of action. I would say indefinite, but we're talking about a compromise, and a compromise would be better than nothing.
So what is the difference between first-degree rapes and second and third?
First, second, and third are the severity and mens rea, the conscious mental state. Rape second is the woman was not in a position to consent. She was so drugged that she was not in a position to consent. We then have the gay panic defense, which I think is repulsive. It is codified homophobia that you can say, I found out the person was gay and I was in such a state of extreme emotional distress that I shouldn't be held responsible. It codifies homophobia. It has no place in New York.
Do juries really decide that on that basis? I mean, you want to forbid it from being raised as a defense, but does anybody believe that?
Well, yes, because it's a valid defense in the state of New York that goes to your mental state. Right now you can say, I found out the person was gay, and I was so disturbed that I am not fully responsible for my actions. So it is bizarre and terrible, and we have to change it. Pay equity for women. Women still make 88 cents to the man's dollar. Climate change bill. We are working through to try to come up with a common position. I am in support of, we have the most aggressive goals, climate change goals, environmental goals in the nation. The issue on that bill is I want to make sure the revenue goes to bona fide environmental needs. And I think we're going to, we can reach resolution on that. Surrogacy, marijuana, driver's license, prevailing
wage. You're going too fast. Let's go back to surrogacy. We've talked about it before, but let's just parse it a little bit. Go ahead.
Surrogacy is 47 states now allow an infertile couple or an LGBTQ couple to contract with a surrogate to carry the fetus to term.
Got it.
47 states allow it. We do not allow it in the state of New York. So if you need to do that in New York, you have to go out of state.
But if you do it in New York and somebody changes their minds, I'm just sort of following along with this, there's not an enforceable contract? Is that what you're saying?
No. And it is right now criminal to contract with a person in the state of New York. So people have to go out of state. And it's not that people don't do it. They just don't do it in this state. And our state law that we have proposed would give women more protections than any other state.
Mm-hmm.
The fear is, the opposition is, well, you could exploit a woman who needs money could just do this because she's desperate, and it could be exploitation.
And we'd that's a feminist position. There's some feminists who believe that, right?
Yes. And by the way, I think there's that's a real concern. I think you can protect against it, and I think our bill does. It says that the woman cannot enter into this contract out of financial need. It says the woman has to have an attorney who is representing her, a counselor. The transaction is supervised by the Department of Health. But for an infertile couple or an LGBTQ couple, all we're doing now is forcing them to go out of state and deal with a woman who does not have the same level of protection. The Senate has passed it, and I applaud them for it. I believe the votes exist in the Assembly if it comes to the floor, but that is an open issue.
Have you talked to the what you're indicating is that it's all up to Hastie, the Speaker.
Yes.
Have you talked to him about it?
Yes, and he is still considering it with his conference. I think it's a major issue for the LGBTQ community. They have worked very hard on this issue. I think they're right. Again, it's 47 states. We were one of the first states to lead on marriage equality. This is the continuation of marriage equality. Now an LGBTQ family couple wants to have a family.
So let me get this straight. 47 states say, yes, you can do this and allow it.
New York is one of three.
And New York is one of three that doesn't allow it.
Okay. It's totally inconsistent with marriage equality, and this is world pride. We're about to celebrate. We just passed gender. We've been very progressive on gay issues, and I don't know why we would take a step back.
Well, you said what the feminist, some feminist position is on this. Don't they have a point? I mean, aren't we exploiting a woman's body in order to give her some money?
they do have a concern. I think our law protects against that concern because there are women who believe, and we've done events with them, women who believe, look, if I can carry a fetus for an infertile couple and give them a child, that is a great thing to do. You know, we talked about a woman's right to choose to end a pregnancy. This gives a woman the right to choose to bring a life into the world. And just the way we said, well, it's a woman's body, the woman's choice on abortion. Why isn't it the woman's body and the woman's choice on giving birth? Especially if we have a law that says she has to have an attorney and she can't be doing it out of financial need, and it's supervised by the Department of Health. Andy Cohen, who's a TV celebrity, speaks very eloquently about this. He had to do it out of state, have a surrogate mother out of state. And he said the surrogate mother was so happy to give him a son and the gift of life.
Okay, I got it. Now, what about prostitution? If a woman should be allowed to do with her body as she likes, why shouldn't a woman be allowed to engage in prostitution?
Well, there are that now raises public health and public safety issues.
Well, you can handle that, right?
Well, I don't. You can.
I mean, right now you got prostitution, and all of those concerns are there. Why not have people submit to health inspections, that kind of thing? I'm not making the argument, by the way. I'm just simply saying the analogy is pretty clear to me.
Yeah, look, that is a discussion that we could have, and there will be people who say you can take care of the public health and public safety concerns, and you can regulate the industry safely.
Mm-hmm.
And there'll be other people who say that is a situation that could never be dealt with in a way that can be effectively regulated, and is demeaning and makes women a commodity. But that'll be a discussion for another day.
Are you for legalization of prostitution?
I have not heard a persuasive case on it.
Okay. But we have to move
marijuana
on.
Is yeah. similar,
sure.
by the way. Marijuana, I put forth a bill that yeah. I believe safeguards the public safety concerns. And if they get the votes and they can pass my bill, I will sign it. But that's also a balance, like we're talking about with surrogacy. We're not legalizing marijuana, Dr. Red Sox. That's the short phrase for it. But we're not legalizing marijuana. We're not saying a child can get marijuana. We're not saying I can open up become a distributor of marijuana. We are legalizing recreational adult use, which means it has to be done in a regulated fashion. Your state of Massachusetts has about 19 stores in the entire state. Why? Because you want to make sure you're regulating how it's being sold, to whom it's being sold, et cetera. So I believe marijuana can be done in a regulated context that protects public safety.
Okay.
And that's my bill.
Okay, I got to stop you there. You told reporters this week that if the state Senate can't pass legalized marijuana, the driver's license bill, and other issues, the Democrats who control the chamber should be primaried next election. Were you serious? Wouldn't that help Republicans retake the Senate? And do you really want that to happen, have the Republicans back in control of the Senate? Some people think that's a possibility. You do.
No. First of all, it's apples and oranges. The issues that would cause the Senate to lose, as I said before, you have an inverse of politics, right? You have a Democratic Assembly that's more afraid of primaries. You have a marginal Senate members who are more vulnerable to Republicans. So it's an inverse of each other. And on gay panic, I do not see a bona fide argument why you would codify homophobia. I do not see that. On sexual harassment and pay equity, where you know women's rights are being diminished in this state, I don't see a Democratic politician counter-argument there. I don't.
Yes, but bottom line is, would you say if somebody did not vote according to your precepts as a Democrat, that they ought to be primaried?
If you are repugnant to the Democratic philosophy, yes. But I also believe people can have valid differences of opinions on issues, right? We just talked about surrogacy, where Speaker Heastie and the Assembly have a contrary position from what I have.
Okay, we talk.
I think it's disrespectful to the LGBT community, et cetera, but I understand their differentiation.
We talked to Senate Deputy Majority Leader Mike Gianaris this week, and by the way, he said that he'd like as much time on the radio as I give to quote my friend the governor. He said,
"Yeah, tell him then he should be the governor."
He said he hopes the Senate takes up the bill to provide undocumented immigrant driver's licenses and says the arguments against it don't hold water on the merits. Is he right about that?
I've supported driver's licenses since Elliot Spitzer first proposed it. I was the attorney general at the time. So I support it. And we have to I support it. It is a not an easy political position, but I support it. I believe doesn't hold water. You know, there are arguments against it, right? Because it's basically the immigration debate. So there are two points of view. I think on balance, from a public safety point of view, from a legacy of New York point of view, 12 states have done it. New York State should pass it. And I've proposed it this year again and supported it since Elliot Spitzer.
So are you rewarding people who have crossed over into the United States illegally and are here illegally? I'm just trying to argue the other side issue.
That is the other side. The other side is the immigration side. They are here illegally, and you are now giving them a governmental credential when they are here illegally. There's a more nuanced argument against it, which actually may be more powerful when it's actually implemented. You're creating a database of undocumented people, which a federal government that is trying to aggressively end find quote unquote illegal people might actually seize, and you may inadvertently be creating a database that the federal government could wind up taking.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that concern also, which frankly is a more powerful concern, because you would actually then be hurting the people that you are trying to help.
Okay, I got to go because I'm running out of time. I wish you people would give me more time, but you just won't. And so I've got to deal with the time allocation I have, and I want to go to the New York Times reported that several high-profile developers called you to try to get the new rent regulations, which have just been passed, blocked. So these are people who gave you a lot of money, and they expect, I assume they expect, you to deliver for them, and you didn't. So what did you tell them when they called you?
I told them what I've told you and what anyone who knows me all my life would tell you. If you think, because you gave me a political contribution, that you are in any way going to get any special or favorite treatment, you don't know me at all. And yes, people give me contributions from all over, and in return, they get the hardest working governor who is trying to get more things done than any other governor. That's my promise.
But that's not what they care about. They care about, they put hard cash on the barrelhead, and they want you to deliver for them, and they're angry about it.
I do deliver for them. Anyone who gives me a contribution, a dollar, I deliver for. I work 24/7. I do my best. I give them the most honest service I can give them, the most effort I can give them. And that's all, that is the entire contract. That is the relationship. You give me a dollar, you say I believe in you, go do your best.
Be interesting to see if they give you as much money in the future, especially since you say you're running for a third or fourth term.
Look, if anybody expected any special treatment for a dollar, I don't want a dollar. And by the way, if in eight years, plus four as attorney general, if anybody ever said to me, doctor, well, I gave you money, I expect X, I might violate the gubernatorial decorum rule
and punch him.
Of refined language and no hostility.
Let's talk for a second about, you know, President Trump's remark on Russian meddling, that he would take their information or other foreign governments' information if it was helpful to him, and he might not report it to the FBI. You got any reaction to that?
What reaction is left to what this man says? I mean, it's, I don't even take him seriously anymore, to tell you the truth. Every day he says something outrageous, illegal, unconstitutional, unethical, and repugnant. How many times can you be surprised? And I think the American people get it. The Democratic Party's challenge is not going to be to make the case against Trump. It's going to be to make the case for the Democrat. I don't believe anyone voted for Trump. They just voted for something new. And the Democrats have to have an agenda that people vote for with a leader who they believe can get something done. What we keep leaving out is the capacity of government leadership, the ability to actually get it done, to know what you're talking about, to be able to get a bill passed, to get it, be able to get a road built, to get a trade deal done. That's government, not only the aspiration, it's the action. It's the action. That's the point. And that's what we've been doing here in New York. That's what our agenda this legislative session has done. And that's what we have done on the physical side with new airports, train terminals, roads, bridges. Getting it done, Alan. There's nothing else than that. People can't eat a promise. There's no promise that fills their belly. There's no rhetoric that fills their belly. Get it done. Help me. Make my life better. Raise my minimum wage. Get me health care. Get my kid into a college scholarship. Let my kid have a better life than I do. Protect my civil rights and liberties. That's why I'm a New Yorker. That's what we do here.
Okay, so Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders is leaving the White House. And as my mom might say, not a bad idea. And President Trump is encouraging her to run for governor of Arkansas. From what you've seen, is that a good idea?
I don't really know if she was a spokesperson for the president's policies. Or if she was ever speaking for herself. You know, that was a spokesperson role, so I don't even know what she believes or not. But assuming she believes anything akin to what the president believes, no, I don't think it's a good idea.
Okay. Now,
but she did have a tough job, that woman.
I would say she had a tough job.
Can you imagine those briefings before she went out? What did the president say? And what did he mean? And what's the answer?
Senator James Skoufis tells City and State this week that sensitive probes are coming from his Committee on Investigations and Government Operations. Do you on the second floor have anything to worry about?
No. No. Let them look at whatever they want to look at. This this administration has been open and transparent and has been probed by numerous entities, and we are every day, and that is fine.
So so let me ask you about your relationship with Speaker Hastie and Leader Stuart Cousins. There's an impression out there that there may be some wide gap between the three of you. They together ganging up on you or being defensive about you. Is that a fair perception?
It is. No, not at all. I mean, you look at what we've accomplished. Nothing gets accomplished unless they pass a bill and I sign a bill, right? So, and we've had record accomplishments. What we said in the beginning is also true. Do I provoke? And do some people say I push an agenda aggressively? Yes. And do I believe I get more done because I push aggressively? Yes. And is it hard to get these controversial issues passed? Yes. And when a local legislator is faced with opposition, should there be a counterforce, or do you need a counterforce to get something done? Yes. These bills, many of these bills, the tough bills, if you don't create a counterforce, then the negative always wins, Alan. So, yeah, I advocate very strongly. I had Mira Sorvino this week, right, on sexual harassment bills. I had Andy Cohen on the gay panic bills. Yes, I'm pushing them. Do they like to be pushed? No. I don't like it when they push me.
Well, do you sit down? I mean, I remember as a kid when I was up here in Albany in our first rounds, and I'd go into Joe's Delicatessen, the wonderful place on Madison Avenue, and there would be Rocky, and he would be sitting with his Warren Anderson and these other guys. They got together, you know, and they were friends. They were pals. They were all Republicans at the time. Now, do you have that kind of, you know, social connection with these people?
I know... the speaker, obviously, I know him longer, and I've worked with him longer. And the speaker is a friend, and I have a very good relationship with him. And we've gone through a lot of tough times and gotten a lot of things done in very difficult circumstances, and I have respect for him.
1 minute,
Senator Andrew Stewart Cousins, I've known her a long time. I supported her in her first race. I supported the members of the Senate. I believe I had a big role in making them a majority. I spent a lot of money and a lot of time, and I have respect for her. I don't know her as well, just as a function of time.
Well, but do you ever have them over at the mansion, break bread together, do that
kind
of stuff?
Yes.
Okay. Well, look, I hate to say this, but we're out of time. It's not my fault. It's your people.
It's your fault that you root for the Red Sox and you live in Massachusetts. That's your fault.
They're very stingy with your time. But we appreciate whatever we can get, and you're here. I hope you're going to come back after the session is over because, you know, there's cynical people here who think that maybe you won't, you know. Once you don't need us, you'll cast us aside.
No. I'm going to make you come with me and do real work and build some airports and bridges and fix the trains after we pass these laws.
Governor, thank you very much. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, always great to talk to you.
Thanks. Bye.